Okay. We're going to do a meditation on what's called the Four Noble Truths now. But firstly, I'm going to give a little bit of explanation. The Four Noble Truths is the most fundamental teaching in Buddhism, really. It's pretty much accepted by all the main Buddhist traditions that this was the first teaching that the Buddha gave after his enlightenment. Everything we do in our practices, one way or another, keys in to the Four Noble Truths. And I'll just give a little history lesson now, just to set it in context. After the Buddha's enlightenment, this is Buddha Shakyamuni, who of course lived 2,500 years ago. It's said that he became enlightened at a place called Bodh Gaya, which is in the northeast of India. After his enlightenment, he was travelling around and he came to a place called Sarnath, which is a few kilometers outside Varanasi. It's a place you can visit now if you have the time and opportunity. And it's said that there he met some fellow practitioners who he'd actually been working with before his enlightenment. And he gave them this teaching, the Four Noble Truths. This is sometimes called the first turning of the wheel of Dharma. Now, I'm going to do this as a meditation. There's quite a common misperception sometimes that all meditation is necessarily about not thinking. And certainly that applies to some types of meditation. I mean, when we're meditating on our breath, for instance, we're really trying to reduce conceptual thoughts. And those are very, very important practices. But there are other types of meditation, and certainly as practiced in the Tibetan tradition. We're actually encouraged with a very concentrated mind to contemplate and think about things. And there are actually three ways that we're encouraged really to take in the Dharma, which are usually called hearing, contemplating, and meditating. Hearing, the first part, actually includes reading as well, but this is when we're really taking the information. The next part, contemplating, is we have to really think about it and test it and see if it really does apply. If it really tallies with our daily experience. So this is very, very important. In Buddhism, we're never encouraged just to take things on blind faith. We have to test things, and see if this makes sense, if it works for us. And then the third part is meditating. And again, through really contemplating in a very, very concentrated way, we can really help to deepen our understanding and really internalize things so they can actually start to affect our behaviors. The way we think and feel about things, the way we react in certain situations, which of course is what our practice is really all about. So I'm going to do this as a meditation, and before we start, again, I'm just going to do a little bit of meditating on our breathing. It's always a good place to start, and just to calm down our minds and get our attention more fully into the present moment. So again, let's try and set a really strong positive motivation for doing this. Think how any understanding that comes as a result. It's not only for our own benefit, but also to help put us in a better position to be able to truly benefit others. Just check your posture again, make sure you're nice and comfortable and relaxed. A straight back, not hunching your shoulders, so you feel nice and free and expansive inside. You breathe. Again, just turn your attention to the natural rhythms of your breathing. Just do that quietly to yourself, just for a minute or so, just to calm down our mind. Bring our attention more fully into the present moment. Okay, I'm going to talk us through the Four Noble Truths now. The first one is usually referred to as the Noble Truth of Suffering. Now, the first thing I think is very, very important, this, but I'll explain, is suffering is actually a translation of a Sanskrit word, dukkha. And it can be a little bit misleading. This can often be a problem with translation, but it's usually translated to suffering. When we talk about suffering in English, this usually has a very, very heavy connotation. We might think of severe pain, grief, things like that, you know, despair, really bad depression as suffering. All those things are included within dukkha, but it also includes much more minor things, just feelings of dissatisfaction, sort of impatience, very mild agitation, boredom. That slight sense of existential angst that we all feel probably from time to time. Things like that. Which probably in English we wouldn't really normally call suffering. It would seem a bit heavy, a bit over the top. And in some ways, it's better translated as dissatisfaction or unsatisfactoriness. That kind of thing. It's very important to be clear on that, that dukkha is actually a very wide, all-encompassing word. It means any sense that things aren't quite right. That we're not feeling totally at peace, or satisfied. And there are actually three levels of dukkha or suffering. The first one is pretty easy to spot. It's sometimes translated as the suffering of suffering. And these are the kind of experiences that we all have every day of our lives when we quite naturally feel aversion towards them. We'd rather not have them. We'd rather move away from them. And it can go all the way from an itch, an irritating itch on our leg, or a feeling of boredom or restlessness, all the way up to things like severe pain, grief, extreme sadness, things like that. Just try and think of some examples of that from your daily life. We all experience these things, and it makes this much more effective if we can really ground it and apply it to our actual life. Try and think of some specific examples if you can. The kind of experiences you very naturally want to be free of. It could be worries about work or family, things like that. Can be problems associated with low self-esteem and things like that. Just feeling crappy about ourselves. Just really think about this. This is something we share with all unenlightened beings. We all have these experiences. It's a good place to start just to acknowledge that. And the next level of suffering, and this is a bit harder to spot, because this applies to things that we actually enjoy, to pleasurable experiences. And it's very important to say, Buddhism in no way is discouraging us from enjoying these things. In fact, it's very, very important we do, just to keep ourselves mentally and physically happy. Well, if we look at practitioners like His Holiness, the Dalai Lama or Lama Sopa Rinpoche, these people have great senses of humour. They get a lot of joy out of life. So that's important. We don't start becoming too puritanical or anything like that. But the problem is we tend to cling to these experiences in a way that is at odds with their impermanence, wanting them to last not wanting to be separated from them. And that inevitably leads to problems and dissatisfaction. And again, try and think of some examples of that from your life. It could be things like, I used to smoke a lot of years ago, and certainly I could see a lot of this kind of suffering, what's called the suffering of change in that. It could apply to food and other things that we enjoy. It can certainly apply in relationships. And when we first, the way we call it in English, is in England, is just fall in love with somebody. I remember when I first met my wife. There's almost this happy, intoxicated feeling. As if this is going to last forever. Of course, that initial feeling doesn't actually last forever. And most people find this in relationships, and you have to work through that. And often expecting that to go on for longer than it is at the root of a lot of relationships falling apart. But again, try and identify areas of your life where you think you possibly do that, where you cling to things, pleasurable experiences, where you then therefore become disappointed when you lose those things, or they don't last forever. Then the third level of suffering, and this is the most subtle, and this is the real underlying one, is sometimes called pervasive suffering. Sometimes the suffering of the aggregate. But this is really the potential to suffer that we have with us all the time. And again, if we check our experience, there can be times when we're particularly feeling particularly calm and peaceful, that's happy, satisfied. Suddenly something happens, it can be a very, very minor thing, or it might not even happen at all. It could just be an internal thing, you know, our mood shifts. And all of a sudden there are problems, difficulties. Again, try and get a sense of that. As long as we carry on as we are, and that's particularly under the sway of ignorance and other mental afflictions, we always have this potential to suffer. Makes us vulnerable. That takes us on to the second of the Four Noble Truths, which is usually called the Noble Truth of the Origin of Suffering. Now, again, and we always have to check these things, this is important, but it's a pretty fundamental assertion in Buddhism that whenever we're experiencing problems, difficulties, suffering, the root cause, that's the main or substantial cause, is within our own mind. Now, this can be quite difficult to take on at first. And by the way, this is something we should just be applying in our own practice. You don't tell people this when they're in the middle of a problem or difficulty. That can often be very uncompassionate and the worst thing to do. But as our understanding and practice develops, we can gradually work with this, and it's actually very, very empowering. I mean, when we're experiencing problems and difficulties, usually our tendency, and I'm very much including myself in this, is to firstly identify the external causes. It's because this person is doing this to us, or this is happening, and this thing's going wrong, and so on. And it's not that those things don't matter, they do. And of course we address those things as much as reasonably as we can. Try to reduce external causes of problems. Our ability to control other people, our environment, is limited. ways we can definitely change the way that we react to it. That's a really good thing to think about sometimes. I mean, we know from our experience at different times, depending on our mood, a very similar situation can affect us very differently. Sometimes it'll really affect us perhaps in a negative way. Other times it might just go over our heads. We don't worry about it. If we look at other people, some people react very, very differently in the same situation, external situation. Get more or less worried about it, more or less angry about it. React to it more or less positively, with patience, with love and things like that. So this really is something we can work with in a very practical way. And without putting too much pressure on ourselves, gently and realistically, and that's always very, very important. Don't expect too much of ourselves. We can bring about change gradually. And the real root cause within our mind, from a Buddhist point of view, is what's sometimes called fundamental ignorance. Sometimes called self-grasping ignorance. And this, when we say ignorance, this isn't just not knowing the way things are. Things appear to us in a way that's actually directly at odds with the way they really exist. Things appear to exist inherently from their own side, independently of causes and conditions. Whereas in reality, everything is part of that interdependent flow of cause and effect. Which we're all an integral part. Particularly important are our exaggerated notions of I. And this isn't just some intellectual thing, this is very deep within our mind. We have this sense of an I that's solid, independent, permanent, more substantial than is actually the case. Of course we exist as a person. I mean, it's silly to say otherwise. But the I is just a mere label, imputed, in dependence on the ever-changing combination of body and mind. But we have this sense of an I that's something much more solid than that. Or unitary. This creates a false sense of separation between ourselves and others, other beings, and between ourselves and the rest of reality. And it is really good initially just to reflect on the way that everything, including ourselves, our mind, our bodies, exists interdependently, independent on causes and conditions. Again, we're all part of that interdependent flow of cause and effect. And there are many levels of this. We can think about it physically. We can think our minds are being affected and affecting each other. And this interdependent flow of cause and effect at its deeper level also includes consciousness and mental labelling. Now, as a result of these exaggerated notions of I, this sense of an I that's more independent, permanent, solid than is the case, This gives rise to self-centered attachment and aversion. Attachment exaggerates the positive qualities of things that we find attractive, that we want to move towards. Aversion exaggerates the negative qualities, the ability to cause us harm of things that were averted, that we want to move away from. And this gives rise to all the other kinds of afflictive mental states that cause us problems in our daily lives. Anger, for instance, which is rooted in more subtle levels of aversion. Excessive desire or greed, which are rooted in more subtle levels of attachment. And in a practical sense, it's actually at this level that we need to work. If we can work on reducing those things gradually, without putting pressure on ourselves, we can gradually get down to these more subtle underlying levels of attachment and aversion and fundamental ignorance. And then we move on to the third of the Four Noble Truths, which is the truth of the cessation of suffering. This is where the good news starts. If all we had were the first two Noble Truths, this would all be a bit grim, but it's not. We can really, really change it and do something about it. And it is possible to reach a state where you've completely overcome all the fundamental causes of suffering. It's called true cessation. Buddha Shakyamuni achieved that, and many practitioners have actually achieved that. But for most of us, that can seem quite a long way off. And it's really good to draw inspiration from times of what's sometimes called temporary cessation. That's times when our mind is particularly calm and we're feeling happy and satisfied. Some people get that when they're meditating, when they're doing calm abiding, concentration meditating. Other people get it perhaps just going for a walk in the countryside. Some people get it when they're just engaged in a very, very positive activity, helping somebody. Other people get it when they're playing sport. I mean, particularly times when our mind is very in the present moment. And it's really good if you can draw inspiration from times like that. And another way we can draw inspiration is when we've had some success at reducing grosser levels of afflicted emotions, like anger, for instance. I mean, there were probably things that made us angry when we were a child, for instance, that perhaps don't now. Some of us have very deliberately worked on these things in adulthood. And even if we've just had a tiny little bit of success, again, we can draw a lot of inspiration from that. If we can reduce these things a bit, there's no reason why we can't continue reducing them until we manage to uproot them completely. So again, really think about that, and think if you can think about examples from your own life. And as we mentioned in the early meditation today, again, it's important from a Buddhist point of view that at its deepest level, our mind is essentially pure and clear. Really accessing and experiencing that is just a question of working gradually, reducing the troublesome mental states, nurturing the positive ones. These things are impermanent. They depend on causes and conditions. They can change. Again, it's always really important we don't put pressure on ourselves. This is a gradual process. We try and really appreciate and take joy in just little steps along the way. Very important we don't expect too much too quickly. We now move to the fourth of the Four Noble Truths. This is the Noble Truth of the Path leading to the cessation of suffering. Now, there are different presentations of this. I'm going to talk about it in the context of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is shared with other Buddhist traditions, but there are other presentations of the path, such as the Six Perfections, for instance, the five paths. But the Noble Eightfold Path can be divided into three parts. Ethics, concentration, and wisdom, sometimes called the three trainings. This is sometimes presented as a triangle, and ethics is always the one at the bottom because it's the basis of the path. It's really important we pay attention to ethics. And in the Noble Eightfold Path, this is divided into three: the right livelihood, we try and make our work at the very least not at odds with our spiritual practice and with our ethics. Again, you don't beat yourself up. We all have to work, we have families to support, things like that. We might not have that much choice, but it is a good thing to think about and pay attention to. And if you can, make your work really conducive to your practice and your overall aims of development. And then there's right action, taking responsibility for our bodily actions, trying to reduce and avoid harmful ones, trying to develop positive ones. Of course, love and compassion is really the foundation of good ethical conduct. And then there's right speech. And again, our words have a very, very big effect. Just a nice word sometimes can really make a big difference to somebody. Obviously, a harsh word can have the opposite effect. So again, we pay attention, try and make our speech meaningful and gentle, kind, so on. And the middle part of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the concentration part, includes effort. It takes effort, developing, transforming ourselves, but we should try and make those efforts joyful. That's very important. And again, we always have to be gentle with ourselves, not try and force too much too quickly. If we do things with joy, we're much more likely to carry on doing them. And also there's mindfulness, and here we're talking about mindfulness in the sense of being aware of what's going on around us, but not only that, aware of our inner world, how we're reacting to it, the kind of thoughts and feelings that are arising. And this is the real key to making what we learn within the Dharma, in Buddhism, actually practical and meaningful, so we can really start to use it to help to transform the way we actually interact with the world and react to it. And then the third one is concentration. And this is about developing what we call calm abiding, shamatha, shinne, single-pointed concentration. With practices like the mindfulness of breathing, or that practice on the clarity of the mind, there are many objects we can actually choose. Some people find a candle flame helpful, some people a Buddha image, and so on. But we're really trying to develop that kind of mental clarity and concentration. This is really powerful, and it's a very, very important part of the path. In fact, when that's combined with our understanding of the selfless, empty, interdependent nature of everything, that's what will actually lead to a direct experience of that. That's what will really undercut that root of suffering, of samsara, that fundamental ignorance that I talked about. And then the final section of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the wisdom part, this has two. There's right view. The best kind of right view is of understanding the empty, interdependent nature of everything, which when combined, as I just explained, with calm abiding, with concentration, will really uproot that fundamental ignorance. But there are all kinds of different levels of right view. And just having a basic understanding of the cause and effect, of the consequences of our actions, can be very, very powerful. And again, that's something we work on gradually. And then the final part is usually translated as right thought. And this particularly relates to our motivation. Try to make our motives when we do things as pure as possible. But again, this is without expecting too much and beating ourselves up. Our motives are often very mixed. And that's normal. I mean, I often check, even at my kindest, and I try to be kind. There's that little bit of I in there that's expecting a little bit of payback or somebody to be like me or be pleased. So again, that's something we have to work on gradually. We try and make our motives as pure as we can. And this isn't just for others' benefit. It's that little bit of I in there that leads to perhaps disappointment if people aren't as grateful as we'd like or so on. It's again something we all experience. So you have to work on that gradually. And finally, just to conclude this overview of the Four Noble Truths, and of course this is something we have to keep revisiting. There's quite a lot of information in there as I've gone through this. Keep exploring these things, testing them, see if it actually helps in our lives, if it tallies with our experience. But let's really resolve that we're going to practice these things as well as we can to the best of our ability, which in the long run will be to our own benefit, as well as helping us to be more able to really benefit others. So again, finally, let's dedicate any benefit that's come, the result of reflecting on this, again, even to the tiniest extent within the overall process of cause and effect, may contribute towards the long-term welfare of all sentient beings.